Exploring the importance of having the right skills to succeed. This is Skillfully Speaking, supported by Babcock International. Presented by Skills Ambassador Jackie Grubb.
Welcome to Skillfully Speaking. I'm Jackie Grubb, and today we have a very special guest joining us on the podcast. She's a trailblazer in the world of well-being, health and beauty, an entrepreneur, a champion of women's health, and an influential media personality. I'd like to welcome the incredible Liz Earle, MBE. Hi, Liz.
Hello. Thank you so much, Jackie. That's such a warm welcome. Thank you.
We're absolutely delighted to talk to you today. And I just really wanted to begin with the focus on lifelong learning and skills, and just wanted to ask you a question in terms of, during your transition from Liz Earle Beauty to Liz Earle Wellbeing, which skills did you find most beneficial in navigating this career shift?
I think it is the ability to manage change. And I think one of the things that we've all learned over the last few years is how quickly things change. And whether that's learning new skills like social media, for example, you know, when I started my first career actually as a journalist, there was no such thing as social media. Later on, when I founded the beauty company, co-founded that, we didn't have social media. We barely had a website, to be honest. And so coming back into the world of publishing, suddenly there are all these different platforms, and understanding how they all work, they're all different. They've all got their different algorithms. They've all got their different language. And then realizing how quickly things change and being able to cope with that. And I think if you ask any entrepreneur, actually, or brand builder, when they're building their brand and it grows very quickly, one of the key skills that you need, particularly with the people that you're hiring, are those who can cope with change. Because not everybody can cope with it. Not everybody feels comfortable with change. And I think you need to learn how to manage change. And that means, I guess, learning how to manage uncertainty, because change is by definition uncertain. You're stepping into something new. And just go with the flow, really, and trust the process.
On the grounds of sort of transitioning careers, and you've talked about entrepreneurs, and you're clearly an entrepreneur, how did your entrepreneurial skills evolve as you ventured into different sectors such as health, beauty, and well-being?
I think you have a kind of inbuilt self-reliance. I think if you talk to any entrepreneur, they are probably self-confessed not very good team players. You know, some people are very comfortable working in a team with lots of others. Others are solo creatures. That goes for all sorts of things in life, in relationships, in work. And I think for me, I love learning. Every day is a school day. Every single day. I think working in the world of well-being, there's so much that's happening that's so fast, and data changes quickly. New studies are released all the time. What we previously thought was factual hard science actually is swept away with some new study. And I often say to my team, actually, there's no such thing as scientific fact. It's only ever current scientific thinking of a theory. So it is that continual evolution of learning, I think, that gets me up every morning.
That's really beautiful. And there was always in the past a focus on qualifications, but actually there is a lot of discussion around that softer skills like communication, like resilience. You mentioned team building. So how did you adapt your communication skills to convey a real complex health concepts across various media platforms?
I think the starting point for everything, whether it's a career in corporate world or career as an entrepreneur, is authenticity. You know, you have to be truly authentic. And I think what social media has taught us is that transparency is really important, because we can't hide anymore as brands. And in the old days, I remember when I started the beauty company with my friend Kim, you know, if somebody had a complaint, for example, they would write us a letter. And they would stick a stamp on the envelope and they'd post it, and we'd get it, you know, a week later, and we'd think about the reply, and then we'd write back, and, you know, time would go by. And you had that kind of thinking time. Now, you know, if somebody is messaging you about something that they're disgruntled with on Twitter or X, as we now need to call within like 20 minutes, it's kind of, well, you know, why aren't you replying to me? What have you got to hide? And so I think one of the things that I've had to learn and encourage my team, my publishing team, is speed, also accuracy and being authentic, not trying to hide things, we obviously all try and do our best. We try and get things right all of the time and check and double check, but we're not infallible. Things will go wrong. And I think it's really important to be able to hold your hand up and say, actually, do you know what? Thanks for calling that out, because that was an error. And we're really glad that you've picked that up and you spotted it, because now we can do what we need to do to change it. So I think one of the challenges is to always be authentic, always to be transparent, because that puts you in really good stead. You can't argue with the truth, can you?
No.
And I think people realize that when you are doing your best, that's something to be respected, and you're not trying to obfuscate and hide, which is great for small brands who are nimble. I think for the bigger brands who do run their organizations by committee, that's really hard, because very often, you know, you'll get a problem and it's got to be escalated up to the higher levels before you can reach a resolution. And that takes time. And as time goes by, you know, things can blow up really quickly on social media. I think that's been one of the big learnings for me in recent years, is just how our response time needs to be faster. But at the same time, you can't have a knee-jerk reaction. You have to think about things. You have to have a measured response and consider what the best way ahead is, and not just, you know, fire off something blindly without considering the consequences. So it is quite complex.
I follow you, and it really, really is clear that you are your true authentic self. You allow people to come in your world. So I'm going to pick up on that authenticity. Can you give us a little bit more about how you really, really prove that authenticity that comes through what we see on a daily basis? And that comparison, as you say, that everything runs so quickly, and the perfectionism, I just wanted to bring in, there's a world now of perfectionism. There's a lot of pressure on people to do everything a certain way. So that balance between being your authentic self, but also being the best you possibly can.
First of all, my presence on social media was not planned. I'm actually, believe it or not, quite a private person. We used to have a PR team, particularly the beauty company, kind of paid to keep me out of the press.
Right.
The spotlight is not a comfortable place to be unless you happen to be somebody who loves shining in the limelight. And that is not naturally my comfort zone. And what really happened, I guess, with that was the beginning of lockdown and the pandemic, was realizing that I had a great community already on Instagram that I would communicate with virtually, i.e. I would put a post up and I'd reply to comments, but that was kind of it. It wasn't interactive. It wasn't live. And then one day I just flicked on my phone and started chatting in the kitchen at the beginning of lockdown, just kind of checking in, saying, these are strange times, but don't forget, there's a lot we can do to protect our own well-being. And, you know, we need to focus on vitamin D and sleep and breathing and get some fresh air as much as you're allowed to and all of that. And I was literally just standing in my kitchen. It was quite an impromptu thing. So that really was kind of stepping out as the real me in my kitchen at home, which I'd never done before. And I had such a great response to it that I was in the kitchen the following lunchtime and I thought, I'll just pop on again and see if there's anybody out there and see how everyone's doing. Let's just check in. And it just felt the right thing to do. And this amazing community built up. And I got these messages, mainly from women who are kind of my gang, saying, it's so great to chat. You know, you will be back tomorrow, won't you? So kind of without any forward planning, I ended up doing an Instagram live every day for about 17 weeks until my family finally said, actually, we kind of quite like our kitchen back. And over the last few years, I've now cut it down to 2 or 3 a week. But
yeah.
I love real connection. You know, it's live. And I cut my teeth in my TV years doing live TV.
Mm.
This morning with Richard and Judy back in the day. Actually, 33 years ago, long time.
Yeah.
And that was live and very immediate. And then doing GMTV and, you know, Good Morning TV and Lorraine and all of those things. I love it because it's live and I think it's authentic. I love live TV. I hate things that are recorded because they can chop you up and make you sound like you're saying anything. But live, you know, if something doesn't go the way you like or you're being misinterpreted, you can say, actually, no, I don't mean that at all. What I really mean is this.
Yeah.
Actually, what social media has done, and, you know, there are many faults and downsides to social media, as we know. And I'll come on to your point about the kind of illusion of perfection, which is something else. But, you know, one of the good things is that you can control what you want to say. In the old days, if I wanted to present something as a kind of broadcast, I would have to sell my idea to a TV commissioner or a radio show host or whatever. Now I have a podcast with over 6 million downloads. I can say pretty much what I like. And the same with Instagram Lives or YouTube channel. You know, it's like a form of television, if you like, that is just your own content. So that drives authenticity. But to your point about perfectionism, and I think this is particularly relevant for women, and I think we are subject to a lot of these illusory ideals. And I have two daughters. I have also three sons, but my daughters are possibly more affected. I have a daughter who's 23 and my eldest daughter is 33. So they've grown up with social media in a different way from my background. You obviously have to understand that what you see on Instagram is the best side of life. And I do say this when people are kind enough to say, oh gosh, Liz, you know, you look so great. I do kind of say, yeah, but only the nice pictures actually end up on my gram.
Yeah.
I can show you a whole load of rubbish ones and really unflattering angles. And, you know, I don't Photoshop, but I do always have a nice light. So even sitting here talking to you, I've got a little ring light in front of me. So, you know, because I know that without that, you know, the bags under my eyes are going to look bigger and my wrinkles are going to be more accentuated. So it's a bit like using makeup. And if you walk into any TV studio, they spend a lot of time on lighting and making sure the set looks good. So I don't think that that's too artificial. So it's not like we've just arrived and, you know, hey, this is it. You know, even in my kitchen, I have a nice light. I make sure that the surfaces are clean. I'm wearing something fairly presentable. I probably, you know, put a brush through my hair. So it is real, but it's also got a little bit of a gloss to it that perhaps real life doesn't always look like that.
Yeah. And thank you for that, because I'm a skills ambassador and I'm passionate about providing the skills for the workforce of today and tomorrow. But, you know, you've already mentioned, and we all know, that if you haven't got your health, that you have nothing. So in terms of looking after our health and well-being, what actually is your advice to all those people out there to really start looking after their own health and well-being?
It is really important. And I often talk to groups of young entrepreneurs or business people. And, you know, I'm asked a question, what is the greatest business asset that you can have? Thinking that someone's going to say, oh, you know, an MBA or, you know, deep pockets to fund your venture or whatever it is. And it is actually your health. And one of the things you need to prioritize above all else is sleep. It's great because it's free. Younger people tend to be not so good at it. But the more we know about sleep, the more we understand how it impacts our brain and our mental health, how it controls our gut health. A lot of our good, beneficial gut bacteria will only proliferate when the body is completely at rest, i.e. asleep. And we used to think that sleep was quite a passive activity. We just flop into bed and that was it and wake up and kind of get on with the real world. Actually, our body does a huge amount of work while we're asleep, but particularly in the brain. So think about from an office analogy, from a kind of business perspective, what happens when we sleep in the brain is it's the time when the brain does its filing. So it gets all the files and all the mess and all the rubbish of the day, and it puts them into little piles and it sorts them out and it stores away our long-term memories, our short-term memories. It's problem solving. It's equipping us with the ability to feel calm and intuitive about what we need to do for the day ahead. So it really is absolutely fundamental. And, you know, one of the things I do with my own team at work is I'll check in and I'll say, you know, how did you sleep? What's going on in your life at the moment? Have you got things on your mind? Have you got things that are preventing you from sleep? And having a good sleep hygiene routine is really, really important. So get rid of all the distractions that will prevent you from sleeping well. So obviously no late night cups of coffee, dark chocolate, anything that got a lot of caffeine in it. You can use supplements like magnesium glycinate is very helpful for relaxation and rest, making sure that your space is as soundproof as it can be. I know not always easy, particularly if you're at uni, for example, if you're in halls. Earplugs, really good invention. Blackout blinds, you can put up a cheap blackout blind in your room, or you can wear an eye mask. Things that will really help. Even if you think you sleep well, you might want to download a sleep tracking app. I use one that's just a free app on my phone and it doesn't use Wi-Fi or anything, so I can disconnect it at night. So I haven't got any worries about EMF disrupting my sleep pattern. That's another conversation. But it will monitor how deeply you sleep. And what we want to do is try and aim for a lot of REM, REM sleep, deepest form of sleep. And that's when our brain is really revitalized. If you're super stressed and you're thinking, I need to get this done, I need to stay up late because it's a problem that I need to solve or a dissertation I need to finish or whatever it is, actually, no, your brain will function much better if it's rested and then you can get on with it during waking hours. And actually, I know this is not something that young people want to hear. And actually, I find it really hard too, even though I'm 60, is try and get up as early as you can. There's so much evidence to show that setting our circadian rhythm by getting up and getting outside,
yeah,
not just getting up, looking at the outside through a window, actually getting those early UV and near-infrared rays from the sun into our retina, no glasses, no contact lenses, straight into the eyes early morning. Obviously, don't stare directly at bright sun, but getting into that environment really helps set up the circadian rhythm. It controls hormone regulation, it controls mood, and it actually helps you sleep better the following night. If you can, get up early. Not easy, I know.
So some really good tips and some sound advice in there, and actually some true leadership skills that were just coming through the fabric of what you were saying. And so if I just pick up on leadership skills, we are all leaders in life. We use leadership skills with our children. We use leadership skills with our staff. You know, we do with our students. So can you talk to us a bit about the leadership skills that have been essential for you in championing the courses such as Live Twice and supporting health-related charities?
I think you have to lead by example. There isn't any other option, really. That's kind of bottom line if you want to cut to the chase. Again, I guess that comes back to authenticity,
yeah,
and trust.
Yeah.
Particularly, I guess, for founder-led brands where there is a name attached. So for me, you know, Lazelle, for example, is attached to beauty products, although I'm not connected to that anymore. It's attached to publishing and podcasts and, you know, fair trade jewelry and all sorts of different things. So there's a real person. So there is somebody to actually watch. But even within organizations, you know, a university will have a head, will have a chancellor, a company will have a CEO, you know, somebody who is there at the head of a parent of a family, you know, is leading by example. And that is really the most fundamental thing, mm-hmm. because otherwise, it doesn't compute. Mm. You know, if you're saying to everybody, hey, you really need to go to bed super early and watch what you eat, and then they see you kind of binging Netflix box sets until 3 a.m. and, you know, bringing in your pizza, you know, I mean, that's not leading, is it? So you have to, I guess, find what you're good at and those skills that you want to communicate. And also, I think, just be open and available and really give people a sense that there's a trusted space. Because as I said before, you know, things go wrong. And with the best will in the world, you know, stuff will come up and bite you on the backside that you weren't expecting. And the most important thing is to be straightforward and front it out.
Yeah.
And I would much rather come to me and say, do you know what? I've just made the most awful mistake. This is absolutely catastrophic. And I'm so sorry. And I really need some help in fixing this. And I've actually thought of a few ways that we could do that. What do you think? So two things there. One is you own up straight away. You don't let it fester. Immediately you sense that something's not right or it's gone wrong or there's an issue. A problem solved is a problem halved. So absolutely, you know, share it with somebody. But then if you are going to somebody for help, you are going to your manager, your team leader, your tutor or whatever, say, actually, this has happened. And here are two or three things I've thought of that will fix it. So you're not just kind of floundering around going, oh, I'm helpless. You know, what do I do? Because that actually doesn't help you grow.
Mm.
And it also doesn't help that you're just going, there, I've just dumped my problem on your lap. You fix it. So, you know, taking that next step. And I encourage, you know, my team and my family and my kids, for heaven's sake.
Yeah.
My eldest recently was saying, oh, the washing machine's broken. So it was like, well, did you look at the manual? I couldn't find the manual. But did you look it up online? Did you make a call to an engineer and, you know, find out when the next service appointment is so that we could then discuss whether that's a good option? You know, take that next step in whatever it is, because you then feel empowered.
Mm.
Because when bad stuff happens, we can often feel really disempowered and we lose a sense of self and autonomy. But actually thinking it through, I mean, some people say that problems are just opportunities in disguise. I think that's possibly a little bit trite, but, you know, there is something in that, actually. Mm. You can usually solve a problem with some possibly slightly more successful outcome than there was at the beginning.
Yeah. And there's something around ownership, isn't there? Because I think it's really easy for people to feel very sorry for themselves and then look for the solutions around them with other people. But actually, you've given a few examples there of people taking their own ownership and perhaps using their values in life as well.
I absolutely agree. And I don't think it's being seen as being pushy. I think it's being seen as being proactive and interested enough, caring enough to actually think about the next step. and considering somebody else and, you know, the fact that you've just burst into their to-do list with some issue of yours that needs fixing, that actually they hadn't got up that morning and planned into their schedule. So it's kind of, you know, being catapulted in. So, yeah, I think it is about taking ownership and having a sense of empowerment. And, you know, learning is just such an amazing gift, isn't it? The fact that we can grow and develop is just such an incredible opportunity, because life is so full and so vast and there's so much out there. And, you know, we do make our own destiny to a large extent by what we surround ourselves with, who we choose to mix with, who our circle of influence is, who we respect and follow. And, you know, I say this to my youngest, who's 13, who is watching crazy cat videos. And it's just, do you really want to fill your head with that? Because actually, there's just so much else that you could be learning. And he's, you know, gradually kind of looking at the kind of fitness trend and all of that, which, of course, you know, has its own issues as well, because he wants to be some, you know, pumped up testosterone hulk, which is not good either. There is this balance. So it's judicious use, I think, of education and the materials and the things that we expose us to.
Yeah.
If you want to build on your skills and get yourself on the right path to success, visit the City College Plymouth website, cityplym.ac.uk. You can hook up with courses, download information packs, guides, and much more. Or find us on social media. We're Skillfully Speak on X, Skillfully Speaking Podcast on Instagram, and Skillfully Speaking on Facebook and LinkedIn. Skillfully Speaking, where hidden skills are revealed. Now back to the conversation.
I'm just thinking back as I'm listening to you there about when you just talked about in lockdown in your kitchen and motivating and inspiring other people. There is a real thing in what you say in terms of tuning into the right people or being with the right people with the right energy. In terms of your advocacy for women's empowerment, going back to the subject of lifelong learning, you're an absolute true example of how people can change, evolve, develop. And when you're really focused in something, you can do something. So can you talk to us a little bit about the advocacy around women's empowerment? And can I invite you to start from your earlier years and talk us through some of those changes?
I've always had a strong sense of social justice. Maybe that was instilled by my parents. My mother did a lot of charity work. You know, I didn't come from a wealthy background. So I saw firsthand a lot of people struggling. And I think, you know, when you've lived that life and you've walked that path, there is an empathy that you can understand, perhaps. And I think in terms of women, certainly now, the women I connect with, I hear a lot of horrific stories, you know, particularly during lockdown, domestic abuse and coercive behaviour. And I'm involved in charities that help with sexual trafficking. And, you know, I think during my life, I've had the opportunity to travel a lot. I traveled quite a lot as a young child. My father was in the Navy. And then later for research, when I was working on women's magazines, we were often sent to, you know, developing countries on press trips to look at ingredients and things. And that continued when I was having the beauty company. I used to go and work with women's groups, particularly harvesting and growing. So being in southern Sudan, for example, with the women who harvest the shea butter, it's an incredibly hard nomadic life. They live in mud huts. They have no access to running water, sanitation. They're often in abusive relationships. Men think that it's completely fine to be violent towards them. There's a lot of female circumcision and FGM. Women and girls are not allowed education in many cases. And I think when you are confronted with the reality of that and you witness it firsthand, I defy anybody to come away and not be moved to do something about it. So when the beauty company was sold and I had a bit of cash, I set up a humanitarian charity called Live Twice, which is still going. And we do work directly with projects, often involving education and women and girls, because they are so marginalized in so many countries. I mean, yes, you know, we talk about sexism here in the UK, but believe me, until you've been somewhere like southern Sudan and really witnessed what poverty is and what sexual harassment is and underprivilege, it's something else. But here in the UK, more recently, I'm a commissioner for the Social Justice, who've just published a two-nation report looking at the last 10 years, actually, and how Britain is becoming even more divided. and what we need to do about that. Everything from drug abuse to domestic abuse to unemployment, skills training, education, healthcare. I mean, it's huge crime. It's a massive, massive subject. And it's completely fascinating and also quite distressing to see just how bad things have got for huge numbers of people in a vast section of our society in the UK. So it's that hard balance I find, particularly on Instagram, where everything is lovely and glossy. And I'm, you know, talking about maybe expensive longevity supplements to help you live longer or face masks to get rid of wrinkles and that kind of thing, you know, which is valid and is interesting. And there is a point to it. But I think also I try very hard not to lose sight of what's going on just around the corner. And I'm very aware of the privilege that I have. And I think for me, that has always driven me. And I don't quite know, in answer to your question, where that came from.
Yeah.
It's something that I try and pass on to my children. And I go to Kenya quite often. My eldest son lives there. Again, there's a lot of underprivilege there. I take my kids there and they've learned to be grateful for things like water coming out of a tap. You know, we might not even think about that. But, you know, when it happens, it's a cause for celebration in many places of the world. So I think it's about perspective and balance.
Yeah.
And you just have to do what you can. You know, you just say to yourself, do I want to be part of the problem or do I want to be part of the solution? You know, and always try and walk in somebody else's shoes. And even if it's just something small, you know, obviously you can give money to charity and things, but often it's better to give time or encouragement or support. Volunteering is just the most amazing thing. And what's wonderful about that is you actually give back something, but you get back even more. You feel even better for having done it, which you shouldn't do it for selfish, but actually it does. It pays back in spades.
Yeah. And skills, education and training absolutely changes people's lives, you know, at whatever age. And you've given an overview of some of your experiences in that. But sometimes from a female point of view, confidence, self-esteem and those sorts of things can prevent people actually doing what they really want to do. I can't let you go today without talking about the menopause. Any handy tips or advice?
It's something that every single person needs to be aware of. Men, women, boys, girls. My young boys are completely on it, not only perhaps for future relationships, but also any midlife woman you come into contact with. You know, it might be your bank manager, your teacher, your friend, your aunt, your grandma, whoever. Bear in mind that from mid-40s onwards, their hormones will be changing and that will be affecting how they feel. And for many women, it can be devastating. And we know that menopause, for example, can take a lot of women out of the workplace because they lose confidence. They lose simple assets like sleep, which I talked about being the most important thing.
Yeah.
You know, my sleep went and I can do a lot of things and manage a lot of stuff. But if I can't sleep, then, you know, the wheels fall off the wagon. So I think absolutely be aware of it. 1 in 100 women under the age of 30, I think it was at 40. I'll have to check my stats on that. Anyway, younger women go through natural menopause early. So it's not just an older woman thing. And of course, there's a lot of surgeries and medication that can also plunge a woman into surgical menopause where she doesn't have her hormones. So it is something for everybody. It's a non-negotiable.
Yes.
Every biological female will have menopause if she lives long enough. And it enrages me actually that so few doctors get good training on it because they get a lot of training on pregnancy, for example, in medical school, but not every woman is going to have a baby. Every woman's going to have menopause.
Mm.
It's far more important that doctors are fully aware of that. You know, 51% of their patients are female, biologically female. So really important to understand the role of hormones, and they affect everything, every single thing in the body, brain, blood, heart, skin, gut, everything is driven hormonally. So when your hormones start to go haywire, and they will in later life, it's really important to understand it. There's a free app called the Balance Menopause app. You can download it anywhere in the world. It's brilliant. You can track symptoms, a lot of free information. I was the first official ambassador for the menopause charity, brilliant organization. There's a great research group called Newston Health, and they are for patients and also for doctors and medics, a really good resource. Dr. Louise Newson is an amazing powerhouse of a woman, probably the most trusted menopause specialist and GP in the world, I would say. She's extraordinary and hugely empowering for women. And she's talking a lot about testosterone at the moment, which is great because testosterone is actually a female hormone. We make more testosterone in our ovaries than we do estrogen. We lose it as we age, and that causes muscle loss, causes cognitive decline. We lose our memory. We have trouble fumbling over words. Word recall is a really common symptom of low testosterone levels. And of course, libido and energy. So yeah, replacing our hormones is vital, in my opinion. It's very safe. It's very health protective. I've written a lot about it. I've written many books on the subject. You've got me on a soapbox now. You're going to have to get me to stop. And again, when you look statistically in the UK, those who live in deprived areas, lower socioeconomic group, are the most deprived. They're the least likely to receive help, the least likely to receive help with HRT, the most likely to be fobbed off with antidepressants and other forms of medication that don't work to alleviate symptoms of low estrogen.
As I'm reflecting, as you're speaking, you see, we're doing full circle in terms of going back to the health and well-being piece, because we don't reach our full potential unless we are as healthy as possible. And we've got amazing staff, amazing students, amazing employers, people in the workplace. But if we don't support that, then even as a country, we're not going to be the best that we can be. And being a woman, there are more challenges in terms of what we've been talking about. So my next question for you, Liz, actually is about work-life balance. So, you know, you've mentioned that you've got 5 children, yeah. You know, you've got amazing businesses, you write books. I watch you looking at the sky in the morning, and actually I'm now putting creatine in my coffee in the morning.
Yeah, every yeah. day.
These amazing tips to just make us energized, motivated, and making a difference to the world, basically. Can we talk a little bit more about what are your strategies or skills that you've actually found most effective in balancing family, career, and your amazing charitable interests?
Well, I don't claim to get it right all the time. And I think looking back, there's definitely times when my children would say I've been too absent. I hold my hands up there. And I think it is very hard, particularly when you're building businesses that require so much attention and there's so much financial risk and uncertainty that it inevitably takes a lot of your time. So, you know, if I'd had my time again, I probably would have tried to spend a bit more time with my children as they were growing up. Having said that, we're certainly making up for it now. So I think, you know, it's never too late to get back that time. And I think there is an inevitability that when you have a loss in life, you do have to cut your cake accordingly. And, you know, some things will get shortchanged inevitably. People often say to me, is it possible to have it all? And I say, well, depends how much you want. Mm. What does your all look like? All looks like different things for different people. And I think over the years, I've come to realize that having it all is inevitably about being happy and healthy, those two things. And I think health is probably first, because it's hard to be happy if you're unhealthy. Not impossible, but it's hard. And it's the thing that we can't buy. You know, you look at someone like Steve Jobs, for example, who had all the money in the world and the ability to contact, you know, anybody that he wanted and all the tech, but, you know, couldn't save his own health. So that's a salutary lesson that actually we do need to absolutely prioritize that and push our own health up the priority table. So even if you are a mother, if you are likely to be a primary caregiver, it's very easy to put everybody else first. And, you know, I look back at my 40s, I kind of lost myself a bit. I was working really hard, building businesses, looking after my team, my colleagues, my employees, looking after my family, my kids, my then husband. Where was I in all that? I was actually quite lost. And it was only later, you know, having gone through divorce and then changing work and having my kids get older, that I suddenly started to prioritize my own health and well-being, which actually then benefited everybody else. Because I became more capable and more giving and more loving and calmer and more rested and more energetic. So yeah, it's like they say on an airplane, you know, put your own mask on before helping somebody else. And the reason they say that is you've got about half a second before you go unconscious. By the time you put it on your child, you know, you're out of it. It's the same thing. You need to prioritize yourself and get yourself really well, so that then you are in a better state to look after those that matter to you around you, and you have more capacity to give. So it's the win-win. Everybody wins. You win and everybody else wins.
I can really relate to that. And I'm just trying to unpack even more. And I don't even know whether there is an answer out there. So you've given some amazing advice and some amazing tips, and I can resonate with some of that as well. So when I think of the young people in the country that we're trying to grow and develop and get there before maybe we did. You know, what are the skills that they do really need in terms of everything that you're saying today?
Well, I've talked about sleep, look after your gut, drink kefir every morning, limit the amount of sugar, does nothing for your brain, does nothing for your body, your insulin levels, all of that health. Get outside as much as you can. Outside, preferably in nature, but just get out. Take up something that's a little bit more mindful, meditation, connect with a faith group, some kind of spiritual insight and community that you can rely on. Disengage from the real toxic distractions that just take our time and our energy. You know, during COVID, I came off all the news apps, cancelled all the newspapers, stopped watching the news. I mean, I've no idea what's in the news, because I literally don't watch it and I don't listen to it. And my view is if there's something really, really crucial that's going to happen, I'll get to hear about it. I don't want drip, drip of toxic negativity feeding my brain and distracting me actually from the good stuff, the positivity and the things that I really need to be cracking on with, because I can't solve world peace. So, you know, it's not within my gift to do that. And, you know, I can manifest all I like, but I mean, that's about as far as it goes, isn't it, really? So I think get rid of the negative distractions. I think young people, just watch the amount of time that's being stolen by apps like TikTok and Snapchat and all the rest of it. Is it building you? It's like when I think about food, I kind of do the 80-20 rule. I try and be really good and kind to myself 80% of the time, and that goes with life too, really. And then 20% I'll kind of kick back and have the tequila or whatever it is. And you know, if you're looking at what you eat, every forkful can either build you up or break you down. It's kind of, there's no two ways about it. So something you're either putting into your body is really good and fortifying and nourishing and you need it, you know, high quality protein, full of antioxidants, whatever. Or it's destructive. It's damaging your gut health. It's spiking your insulin. It's contributing to, you know, clogged arteries or whatever. So think about that with life. Think about everything that you do, every, you know, half hour that you spend doing something, whether it's social media or reading a book or hanging out or even having a conversation. You know, negative conversations actually put thoughts and wiring in the brain that's negative. You know, gossiping and being unpleasant about other people actually backfires in the long run, because it's putting a lot of negativity and negative patterns in the brain. Whereas if we can surround ourselves with positivity, we're going to feel better for it. We're going to feel stronger and lighter and fitter and more resilient. And, you know, I do think with the way the world is going, we're going to need that. So we're going to need to invest in ourselves so we're better equipped.
And there's real clear evidence, isn't there, really? So we've talked about health and well-being. We've talked about skills and education. And we've talked about leadership and entrepreneurship. And business acumen is absolutely imperative, isn't it, in terms of some of the successes that you've talked about. And if we think of our generation that are here today, what would you advise them in terms of the business acumen that you've learned on the way?
Well, my motto has always been build it slow, build it strong. And I think you have to be prepared to crawl and then walk and then run, maybe sprint at the end. But I think today I see this a lot with young people, that there is an impatience and wanting things to happen really fast, you know, maybe because that's what we're seeing on social media. But actually, strong, resilient brands are not built in a flash. You've got to have really solid, strong foundations. And if you are thinking about building a brand, you've got to be absolutely, entirely passionate about it, because it will take up your entire life. You know, you've got to be prepared to put the time in, the money, the effort, the dedication. So if you are not truly, truly passionate about it and absolutely love it beyond all else and think, I'm absolutely not going to be able to live unless I do this thing, then please don't do it, because it will take so much from you. And you have to really genuinely believe and know that it's going to be worth it. Yeah, I think that's probably my fundamental thing. What I would say in regards to business acumen is understand that you can't do it all. Yes, of course, we can fast track learning and skills. So for me, for example, I think looking back, particularly with the beauty company, I wish I'd actually spent more time asking others for help, other specialists. I think Kim and I, we thought that we could do it all. I mean, we're both kind of control freaks, so it's quite hard to let go of stuff. But actually now with my publishing business, I acknowledge I'm terrible with numbers. I'm really good with words, but I can't even now read a spreadsheet. I mean, balance sheets, profit and loss. It's like just numbers. Maybe I got dyscalculia or something, but I just can't do it. So I call in other people and I rely on other people to fill in the areas that I can't manage. And I think recognizing where your strengths and weaknesses are is really important in business, because it's no point in struggling with something that you just can't get, you know, from whatever way that your brain is wired. So I think business acumen, yes, really good. Try and recognize what your strengths are and really focus on those and try not to spread yourself too thin.
Yeah, and you've already related to that, haven't you? It's really important, isn't it, that we live in the now and we make the most out of our precious life. So many people get to a certain age and then wonder what to do next or not look at their health so intently as they did before. And obviously, you're a true ambassador of making the most of later in life. So can you tell us a little bit about your book that's going to be launched very soon, Liz?
It's called A Better Second Half, and it's written from the heart. I think I've written 35 or 36 books over the years, and this is definitely the best by a country mile. And I think the reason for that is it's lived experience. And I'm now 60, and I believe I'm halfway through my life. So I'm definitely gunning for 120, but with full faculties, because, you know, we're all living longer, we're all aging at a much greater rate. And, you know, many more of us are living longer than ever before, but we want to live well. You know, we need full cognitive function. We need mobility. We need vitality, energy, purpose, all those things. And there's so much that I've learned over the years that I just want to share. You know, I am fitter, stronger, happier, more resilient, all of those things at the age of 60 than I was in my 40s. You know, how does that happen? There are things out there that we can do that are simple. Like you said, creatine in your coffee, getting up and looking out and looking up in the morning. You know, the things that are not hard. Well, cold showers might be a little bit hard, but you know, see.
Somebody who's into cold water swimming, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit of cold, you know, get that tiny cortisol micro spike in the morning, really, really good for you. That was my New Year's resolution, actually. Every single day, 365 days this year, I'm having a cold immersion, either cold swim or cold shower. Even if I can only manage 10 seconds, I'm absolutely going to do it. And the great thing actually is that when you've had your cold shower, ideally 60 seconds, just at the end of your regular shower, you have done something that has really challenged you. In fact, you've probably done something that's going to be the hardest thing physically that you're going to have to do that day, because it's very easy not to do it. And you just get a real sense of power and strength. And yeah, I did this, you know, that kind of propels you through the day, you know, despite the fact that it's also massively positively influencing your hormones as well.
Brilliant. When is your book out, Liz?
It's out on the 25th of April.
Yeah.
And it's called A Better Second Half, How to Dial Back Your Age to Live a Longer, Healthier, Happier Life. And I talk about lots of things, you know, all the usual suspects, really, that you would think of: gut health, physical fitness, why I eat a lot of red meat, some of the interesting longevity supplements. I talk about things like resveratrol and spermidine and quercetin, and I talk about NAD and senescent cells and zombie cells and all that longevity science, which is so fascinating. But then I also talk about resilience and relationships. I talk about sex. That was quite a tricky chapter to write. And then I talk about, really at the end, about finding your purpose. And what's it all about? What's it all for? You know, when we actually get to the end of our life and we look back and we say, was that it? I don't want to get to that stage. And I don't think anybody probably listening or watching does either. So it's about connecting with your purpose and finding it before it passes you by.
Fantastic. We'll look really forward to reading that, Liz. And I have to say, Lizelle, MBE, it's been an absolute privilege to talk to you today. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. I've really enjoyed it.
Skillfully Speaking is supported by Babcock International. Visit babcockinternational.com. Presented by Jackie Grubb. Produced by Paul Philpott. Production support by Lisa Hartwell. Edited and mixed by Martin Burgess Moon. Video content by Mark Stevenson. Coordinated by Louise Greenleaf. Produced by Fresh Air Studios. Copyright City College Plymouth. All rights reserved.